The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our program for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Well, we return now to the October 2019 edition of Our State magazine celebrating North Carolina. This is the annual mountain issue, Grand Canyon of the East, Linville Gorge, it says right on the cover. I see no reason why we shouldn't jump right into that rather lengthy article. It's right in the center of the magazine. It says, The Mountain Issue, Linville Gorge, Grand Canyon of the East. Well, I've been to the Grand Canyon. I don't remember how much of Linville Gorge I've seen. It's not exactly the same view, but it certainly is a pretty one. This is saying on the double spread here, a six-shot panorama tells the story of Linville Gorge. Almost the entire expanse, nearly 12,000 acres, can be seen here from Hawksbill Mountain, straight across the canyon. The Gold Coast Cliffs catch dawn's first light. In the distance, Table Rock will brighten with the early morning sun. Peer over the lip of the gorge and you'll find the source of all this natural beauty, the Linville River. The picture itself has a bunch of granite in the front. We're just looking at kind of probably the top edge of a peak here. Looks like a nice place to lay out on the granite or to walk around and catch a wonderful view. There's a valley straight ahead with the mountains on either side, and then there are more mountains in the distance as everything turns rather hazy, and then we start with the light blue and salmon color and grayish blue, and there's a little bit of green in the clouds this time in the sky. Linville Gorge is our natural wonder, thanks to geological shifts and the plodding of water and time. It took eons for the Linville River, spilling over the falls, to carve a chasm some 1,400 feet deep in the craggy bedrock of Pisgah National Forest. But this showstopper promises more than falls and caverns, vistas and challenging hikes. All along U.S. Highway 221 South, which twists through Burke and Avery counties, you'll find communities that give the gorge its heart and soul. Crossnore's weavers, Linville's builders, Morganton's neighbors. Here the landscape inspires everything from homemade pie to local art and crafts, and just taking in the scenery is an adventure. Now, they have some hand-drawn, looks like watercolor, pictures here that are really maps. And we start in the lower right-hand corner with a picture of probably a town hall, and it says Morganton. It's where 64 intersects 70 and 40. And directly to the left of that, we have Lake James. And all of this, by the way, is in the obviously western North Carolina. If you come to the point along the Virginia border where we drop down at like a 45-degree angle and start coming down, this is directly below the point where it drops off and maybe a third to halfway down in that area toward the southern border. So we've got Lake James, and if we go north from Lake James, we see the Linville Gorge Wilderness, and there's an inset which further describes that. On the left side on Route 221 is the Linville Caverns, and above that, Linville Falls. And to the left of that, Linville Falls Winery. And they mentioned up above in the text, Crossnore Weavers. They're high up, very close to Linville, which again is at the top Sort of, if you draw a line between Linville and Lake James, you've got the Linville Gorge Wilderness in the center. And the only other thing is on Route 181, which comes out of Morganton, going to the northwest, we have Brown Mountain Overlook. So in the detail map of the Linville Gorge Wilderness, which is drawn on the side, we have the river. It looks like a misshapen Christmas tree. It looks like it has a little trunk, and then it comes straight across at the bottom, and then it winds up toward the top, and then it winds back down. Doesn't get much narrower or wider, except in the center where it actually gets narrower. But running up, mainly along the left side of this, in a little ways, is a river, which comes ultimately down into Lake James. And so at the bottom, you have Pinnacle, the town of Pinnacle. And then as you start up, you've got Shortoff Mountain. This is the Linville River, is the name of the river. Then about in the center on the right-hand side is the Chimneys. Above that is Table Rock. And then above that to the left of the Linville River is Wiseman's View. And finally on the right, Hawksbill Mountain. It's interesting because on the next page there's an ad for the North Carolina Zoo, and it says safari in Africa, no packing, passport, or plane ride required. It made me think South Africa, Cape Town, has a tabletop mountain. Now, I haven't seen the one at Linville, but I have been on the top of the one in Cape Town, and if you look at it from both of them from the distance, it's a mountain with a flat top. And so, turning the page, we're going to get started with the Linville look. The elegantly rustic bark shingles that give this mountain town its character are as fashionable today as they were more than a century ago when a famous architect introduced them. Written by Robert Yidgett Smith, we have a picture of the dining room inside. It's interesting, the wall and the ceiling look like they are made of bark or of pieces, or I don't want to say logs exactly, but branches, which still have all of their bark on them. So I'm not exactly sure how that's done, but it's really interesting. And, well, now I know by looking at the right-hand side, it says chestnut bark shingles line the dining room walls and ceiling of the studio. This Beach Street dwelling was designed by architect Henry Bacon, who also designed the Lincoln Memorial. Dot Griffith's Airbnb reflects the natural style that Bacon pioneered in Linville. And this is that the outside is similarly attired, if you will, and it's all wood with a little red trim around the roof. The mountains of North Carolina are about 800 miles from the luxury boutiques of Miami's bustling design district, but they're on Northeast 40th Street in a temple to high-end consumerism. Shoppers are confronted with the soulful presence of native North Carolina trees. The entire two-story exterior of Christian Louboutin's flagship shoe store is covered in tulip poplar bark harvested from felled trees throughout Appalachia, including the Linville area. Hundreds of square, gray, deep-ridged bark shingles stretching upward like a sapling seeking an imaginary canopy. Pause to press your hand to the nubby bark, and you can almost hear the wind whispering across the nose of Grandfather Mountain. People always want to touch it, says Marty McCurry, whose North Carolina company, Barkhouse, co-owned with his wife Chris, supplied Louboutin with the bark, acquired from privately owned and managed forests. It's always shocking to see it up close. They can't for the life of them figure out how the material got manipulated in that way, but they know what it is. Neither Chris nor Marty was surprised that the world-famous shoe designer, think the crimson-soled high heels beloved by celebrities, would tap into the power of trees to inspire and stir passion in its employees and customers. The McCurry's list of international clients includes Google and Nike. It evokes such a personal response, Chris says. I think the bark of the tree is the perfect metaphor for mindfulness. The use of tree bark in architectural design is an ancient tradition because it's sturdy, long-lasting, and expressive. But the style of this particular shingle, square, deeply ridged, with a smooth edge, traces its roots to the late 1800s and the town of Linville and the surrounding community mountains. Or rather, excuse me, the surrounding mountain communities. Grandfather, grandmother, Pixie, and Flat Rock among them. The area was so remote that it was once referred to as the state's lost provinces. On Linville's quaint streets, many of which are named for native trees, almost every bungalow, cottage, and grand manor, and some interior walls as well, is now enveloped in a clean-edged bark shingle. The look defines the town. Bark-covered branches embellish garden archways, footbridge handrails, even birdhouses. In the center of town, guests at the historic Esseola Lodge relax on porches and stroll under arbors that embody Linville's affinity for wrapping itself in trees. But it wasn't always so. In 1888, a group of investors, including Donald McRae of Wilmington, purchased the undeveloped settlement, then called Clay, with plans to turn the property into a mining and timber hub. Some say it was their wives who convinced them that Linville's most treasured asset was actually its beauty. The mountain air was clean and cool, the streams full of trout. That it took effort to get there would only make it more appealing as a summertime mountain retreat. At one of the early stockholder meetings, McRae wrote the name Henry Bacon in the margin of his notes. Bacon, a young architect who worked for a prestigious New York firm, had grown up in Wilmington and at one point lived across the street from the McRae's. Perhaps Bacon could help the young town identify its character and give the new resort its distinctive look. Henry Bacon first visited Linville as a child, but he was in his early 30s when he stepped off the stagecoach in the mountain town again in the late 1890s. By all accounts, he was well-liked and modest, known as an architect's architect with a reputation for thoughtful, emotive designs. His work included monuments, which, only a few decades after the Civil War, meant working with families of both Union and Confederate soldiers. He was secretly sketching designs for a future project in Washington, D.C., what would become the Lincoln Memorial. But when Bacon arrived in Linville, he was not yet famous, and the town was still a fledgling resort community. 16,000 acres of land had been cleared, albeit in stumpy fashion, to make way for a post office, a sawmill, and lodging. There was even a mayor. The Esseola Inn, which would burn to the ground in 1936, reborn as Esseola Lodge, had rooms for rent, but getting there was still an arduous task. Like most people, Bacon's journey likely would have taken him over his newly built Yonalosi Turnpike, today's U.S. Highway 221. Wagons often got stuck in the mud on the twisty, unpaved road. Still, the breathtaking views of the Blue Ridge Mountain, which were chock full of American chestnut trees at the time, made the journey worth the effort. The chestnut was the most important tree in the eastern United States. These mighty giants were fast-growing, tall, and resistant to rot. The wood was perfectly suited for building homes, furniture, musical instruments, coffins, and telephone poles, and the bark's tannic acid even softened leather. That same bark also made magnificent shingles. Bacon left no notes on what inspired him to further ennoble the chestnut tree by making it the centerpiece of his designs. Shingled houses were all a rage in Europe, coastal New England, and the Adirondacks. Linville even had a few before Bacon arrived. But those early shingles were rougher, jagged, and unevenly shaped. Some were just slabs. Chris, who spent years researching the history of this distinctive design method for her book, written with Nan Chase, Bark House Style, Sustainable Designs from Nature, surmises that Bacon's innovation might have been a serendipitous idea sparked by seeing the stacks of Linville chestnut bark that were destined for tanning factories. It was a perfect solution. Let's clean up the bottom edge and make a squared shingle with a handsaw, Chris says. That was the big change. Now you got a more refined look from a very rugged material. Bacon's idea was considered a new frontier in bark-style architecture. The Linville look, as some call it, echoed the town's natural surroundings and gave residents a visual and tactile way to express how they felt about their beloved retreat. Although Bacon initiated the town's noble look, he only designed a handful of structures himself. Soon, his time was taken up by larger, even more ambitious projects. In 1912, Bacon's design was chosen for the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., a magnum opus that would so overshadow his work in Linville that many residents today don't even realize that their beloved bark walls were essentially his creation, too. Only two original Bacon structures are still standing, the studio, a cottage that was originally built for a painter, and All Saints Episcopal Church. The original chestnut shingles, some 2 inches thick, cover the walls of the church more than 100 years later. Beams reach across the ceiling. The space is hushed and serene, like a forest monument that honors not only Bacon's contributions to the town, but the memory of the mighty chestnut. In 1904, a devastating fungus from Japan began its destruction of the American chestnut. Saplings continued to sprout, but the fungus lurked between the bark, stealthily killing the trees just as they began to grow strong. Less than 10 years later, the blight crept into the mountains around Linville. The last chestnut shingle was hung in 1940. It would take a new generation of innovators like Chris and Marty McCurry to rethink bark-style houses and bring them into the future. The McCurry's Bark House headquarters is down the road from Linville on Main Street in Spruce Pine. It's a touchable warren of hallways and rooms covered in richly textured bark, roots, and twigs. Even the restroom feels like the cozy inside of a stump on a pine-scented ridge. Marty studied architectural design at UNC Charlotte and chemical engineering at NC State, but his understanding of trees and how to manipulate natural raw materials came from forest walks with his grandfather, a Scotch-Irish Highlander in Burke County. By 12 years old, Marty could make a squirt gun out of elderberry shoots. He walks through one of several warehouses where he's experimenting with bringing out whorls of deep red in pin cherry bark. In another, he runs his hand along a single sheet of tulip poplar the size of a wall. It's ready to be shipped. Examining the even tone and gunmetal gray hue, he can tell where the tree grew up, most likely the west side of a ridge, a spot with good late afternoon sun, generally hot but not direct. He knows such things. You can tell what kind of forest you're in by the sound of the leaves, he says. And if you can't tell from that, you can tell from the smell, because every tree smells different. When he and Chris were dating in 1986, they used to ride around the Linville Historic District, where shingles were beginning to show their age. After the 1940s, new bark shingle construction was non-existent. Bark, mostly tulip poplar, was only used for patching old chestnut homes. Because it wasn't harvested and manufactured in a consistent way, it curled and weathered poorly. Marty learned this firsthand in the early 90s when he struggled to help his sister build an old-style bark house. When those shingles were first done, he says, they were air-dried and put in non-insulated structures. They were just summer homes. Everyone loved that look and was right for embracing its comeback. But there were a lot of things that had to be dealt with. Building codes for fire safety and indoor air quality didn't exist in the early 1900s, nor was there a recognized system for grading bark. Depth of corrugation, proper texture, of preparing the wood so it would last. Marty began sketching designs for innovative drying kilns and racks and new peeling tools. In fact, all of the standards that exist today for this kind of bark product were created by Marty. Most days, the warehouse yard is filled with stacks of fresh bark, pressed flat in pallets that allow for air circulation. Often, it's tulip poplar, still the only wood that the McCurrys use in the exteriors because the trees grow fast and straight, and their bark will hold up to the rigors of processing and installation. I had done some studies in poplar bark in architecture school. I just loved the texture of it, Marty says. The flattened bark will spend up to a week in a 150-degree kiln, a process that disinfects and cures it. Done right, the bark can last about 75 years. It's pricey, but it's environmentally smart and saves money in cooling and heating. No sealants or periodic treatments are needed. In June and July, when sap is rising in trees, the driveway to the warehouse yard is lined with pickup trucks, vendors coming straight from nearby forests, their truck beds weighed with large pieces of curling bark. Peeling bark takes skill and strength. Around here, it's considered something of an art. Vendors present paperwork demonstrating that they followed a strict protocol. Bark House has stringent environmental and social equity standards. Among its many awards is the first ever platinum certification from Cradle to Cradle, an international organization that assesses sustainability practices. Chris and Marty know most of their vendors by name, and their families too. Mountain people like them who wouldn't be surprised at all if the shoppers in Miami who would want to stop and touch the bark of a tree. When you're walking through a busy city, Chris says, you're inundated with concrete and asphalt and steel and glass. It's so hard. And then you come upon something that is so reflective of nature, and it's a tree. All right. I'm going to skip forward now a few pages to see if we can get an article that will fit within our time frame here. Actually, there's one very near the back here that I've denoted, which can be read in smaller sections if necessary, because this is called Viewfinder. It fits right in with the spirit of this mountain issue. When it comes to mountain vistas, nothing compares to the magnificence of Linville Gorge. From gentle strolls to near vertical climbs, there's a path for everyone who wants to enjoy some of the state's most stunning scenery. Written by Katie King and Andrew Salmon. First one is Hawksbill Mountain. Jutting out from the landscape like high dives, the jagged cliffs of Hawksbill Mountain rise nearly 2,000 feet above the valley floor, making this summit one of the highest points in Linville Gorge. The roughly 1 mile hike to the top starts out gentle before a challenging ascent gives way to a wide, brushy plateau. It leads to the north side of the mountain. I'm sorry, I missed a line here. A trail to the right of a large boulder, you'll know it when you see it, leads to the north side of the mountain, where hikers are rewarded with rare 360-degree views of the gorge and beyond, including Grandfather Mountain, Table Rock, Mount Mitchell, and on clear days, Charlotte, some 90 years away. Double spread here. Left-hand side is pure mountain in the foreground, just covered with trees. You don't see any rocks really in there, maybe just a little bit. Yeah, you do see some cliffs, but they themselves have some evergreens or other type of growth on them, so it's kind of hard to see the rocks. But on the right-hand side, we've got this just like a stack of boulders all put together and compressed, and there's a couple bravely sitting up at the top, fairly near the edge there, enjoying the view on a cool day because the man has a parka on. And the next one is Shortoff Mountain, a 7.4-mile round-trip hike that rises more than 1,300 feet, brings hikers to the summit of Shortoff Mountain. It's worth the effort. The wildfires in 2007 and 2017 that cleared much of the tree cover opened up vistas of Lake James, Table Rock, and the Gorge, and allowed wildflowers and ferns to thrive. Near the summit, a charred, withered tabletop pine marks some of the best views on the trail. And here is a hiker with an orange backpack sitting on a little ledge in front of that really weathered tree. It looks like it burned, and then it just kind of hangs in there. And on the left is one of these amazing pictures of these hikers who climb right up with nothing but their hands, no rope to pull on above them. It says, throughout the gorge, climbers can find routes for various skill levels and techniques at the Chimneys, Hawksbill and Shortoff Mountains, and Table Rock. This looks like a young lady, based on the ponytail that's hanging straight down. She's out almost 90 degrees. Her hands are coming 45 degrees up to some impossible rock edges that she's holding, and her feet are wedged in. And down below, she's put in a carabiner? A clip that's connected into the rocks so that if she falls, she's going to swing from that point. I have no idea how she got from where that is out about 10 feet perfectly flat and then started up again on the side. It's absolutely amazing to watch these folks. Very, very talented. Wiseman's View. The hardest part about getting to Wiseman's View isn't the hike, it's the drive. 4 miles up the bumpy, unpaved Kistler Memorial Highway, a short trail leads to two spectacular overlooks named for Lafayette Uncle Fate Wiseman, who in the 1800s often camped here while his cattle grazed nearby. The first stone platform offers a panorama of Table Rock and Hawksbill and Brown Mountains, while the second opens to a wide-angled view of the northern half of the gorge, where the Linville River can be heard ever so faintly rushing nearly 1,000 feet below. Beautiful morning picture here. The sun is shining like a star through the leaves of a tree. It looks like it must be fall because the leaves are kind of golden in color. And then as we look down, the scene opens up onto a mountain top. But because the sun is behind it, what we see is everything through a blue haze. And the mountain is heavily covered with evergreens, which are now ever blues, so to speak. Then we have Pinnacle. A final unmarked trailhead on Kistler Memorial Highway leads to a sandy path that gently slopes up and ends in a ring around the striking Pinnacle Rock formation, rising almost vertically out of the landscape. A designated viewing platform overlooks Lake James, Shortoff Mountain, and the southern end of the gorge, while adventurous spirits can free climb to the top of the rock for 360-degree views. A man is standing right out on the pinnacle here, enjoying the view. And how about Brown Mountain Lights? As early as the 1850s, visitors to Linville Gorge reported seeing glowing orbs seemingly appearing out of nowhere on Brown Mountain. No one knows what causes them. The flashlights of nighttime hikers, electricity or natural gas, ghosts searching for missing loved ones in the woods. But it's not for lack of trying. Researchers have been working to pinpoint the source of this rare phenomenon since at least 1913. The overlook at Wiseman's View is a great place to catch a glimpse of these mysterious lights, if you are lucky. Lastly, the chimneys, the mighty granite pillars that give this part of the gorge its name, are a rock climber's dream. But they're popular among hikers and campers, too. The path through the chimneys forms part of the Mountains to Sea Trail as it passes through the gorge, winding over, around, and between the rocky outcrops, where peregrine falcons can sometimes be spotted among the crags. The trail itself offers plenty of views to the surrounding mountains to both the east and the west, but for those with the equipment and the nerve to reach the top of one of the many boulders, the reward is a view that spans from the Piedmont to Tennessee. Somebody's got a tent right on top of one of the rock outcrops here. Well, we run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I certainly hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions? Call the studios, 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.